You're listening to Vatican Radio. A spiritual man with strong leadership skills and the ability to listen to the voices of bishops and lay people around the world. Those are the key characteristics that cardinals are looking for in the choice of a new pope, according to Britain's senior church leader, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor. The former Archbishop of Westminster turned 80 last year, so won't be taking part in the voting for a new pope, but he is present at the discussions or general congregations taking place this week ahead of the conclave. The English church leader talked openly to me about the need for greater collaboration between the pope and the bishops to tackle the very real challenges facing men and women around the world today. He also reflected on the legacy of Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI and his final meeting with the cardinals on the very last day of his pontificate.
He said a few words to us, as you know, lovely words, and he wanted the cardinals to be like an orchestra. He didn't say who was the conductor. The conductor is the Lord. And I remember him for many things, but I remember, not all, but many of his homilies. He had a beautiful use of words.
What did you say to him on that occasion?
Well, I thought he'd made up his mind and then he was calm. There was no going back. There was no kind of sadness. There was just calm. This is what the Lord has asked me to do, as it were. My work is finished here, but I continue it in another way. So when I went up, I just sort of, I thanked him, really, for all he'd done, and kissed his ring. And I was wondering if I was going to say any more, but there really wasn't time, so I thought that was enough. I thought it was a fitting end, really, that he should be there with the senior churchmen, people who'd been there for most of his pontificate, and all the retired cardinals like me, there just to be with him. Very moving.
He will, of course, be remembered as the first pope in 600 years to resign, but when the dust has settled, if you like, on the end of this pontificate, what do you think will be the most striking memories, the hallmarks, if you like, of this past 8 years?
I think, first of all, as I've said, the lucidity of his preaching and teaching. And he's quite clearly a very spiritual man. And I was thinking we've been very fortunate, with our popes. I mean, I go back 7 popes now, but the ones I remember were Pius XII, and then you go on Pope John and Pope Paul and Pope John Paul and so on. And he was of a different mold in the sense that he was the most brilliant pope we've ever had intellectually. And what I've always enjoyed, when he was cardinal, I met him a lot, his courtesy. He was a very courteous man. So here we have a pope who is very prayerful, spiritual man, a pope of a brilliant mind, a pope of courtesy, and a pope who was so different from his predecessor. And in a way, actually, that wasn't a bad thing. Pope John Paul was the great. We can't have, Pope something the great every time. So he sort of calmed it all down, I thought.
Was that on your mind at all when you look back to the last conclave? Was that perhaps in your thoughts when you elected him?
Well, I think we were quite happy at the end of the day to elect a 77-year-old, because we were quite happy with a shorter pontificate. All very long pontificates have problems as the Pope gets older. So there was that, I think, in the minds. But also, there was a sense, and we gradually came to realise, that there wasn't anybody else as good among the cardinals that reached the capacity he had for spiritual leadership.
At his first Mass with you in the Sistine Chapel following his election, he said he takes on as his primary task the duty to work tirelessly to rebuild the full and visible unity of all Christ's followers. He hasn't achieved that in any way. Is it fair to say that, apart from the ecumenical dimension, that the Catholic Church today is more divided than it was 8 years ago?
If we're talking about the Catholic Church, I don't think it's any particularly more divided than it ever was. We've had its troubles, as we all know. But I think the remarkable thing is that the Catholic Church, at the deepest level of Christian faith, can live through crisis and troubles and scandals and all with sadness, repentance, but it knows the church goes on. And I think Pope Benedict, here we have a very clear way, a distinction between the office and the person. The person goes, but the office continues. And if you refer to ecumenically, well, I think the difficulties that we have on the ecumenical path, well, were there well before Pope Benedict came. But in an odd sort of way, I think even though the full unity for which we long is going to take a long time, but the way now most Christians feel together with each other, especially in Europe. I think that's a remarkable thing when I think back to my young days. And now in our own country, in Britain, we find particularly Anglicans, Free Church and Catholic, cooperating on so many things. And we focus on things that unite us, not on what still divides us.
What do you think has been Pope Benedict's specific contribution, perhaps, to the search for Christian unity?
Again, I would have thought both a personal one by his meeting with other church leaders, Orthodox, Anglican and Free Church, but I think also the lucidity of his teaching. I'm not thinking just of doctrine, but of Christian faith. And I think that's what he himself focuses on when he meets and talks to other fellow Christians. And I think he's just following on a good tradition there of the previous popes, especially Pope John Paul, but also Pope Paul.
The resignation of Pope Benedict was described by the former Archbishop, Rowan Williams, as something of a demystification of the pontificate, in a way perhaps opening up new discussions on the role of the papacy, as Pope John Paul II called for in Ut Unum Sint. Do you think there's any truth in that?
Well, I don't think we've worked out the implications. In a sense, it gives the cardinals more freedom to elect anybody they want, old or young or whatever, in the sense that if a pope can resign, then I don't think we've fathomed what the consequences of that is. But I like your word, demystification of the papacy. Yes, maybe a little bit. But I remember when Pope John Paul came to Britain in 1982, afterwards a group of Anglican and Free Church leaders came out. And I went with them to help them here in Rome. And they went to see Cardinal Ratzinger, and that was a very interesting meeting here. And that's when I first realised what a brilliant man he was, when he answered their questions. And at the end, I said, well, how have you enjoyed? They said, they used another word. They said, this has demythologised the Curia, which I thought was rather nice. So I think the role of the papacy, when you think of history and the way of how the papacy has always been there, but it's only in a way in the last sort of 150 years that it's become so personalised. And of course, in our generation, there's such an easily recognisable world figure, a spiritual leader. Now, that wouldn't have been quite so true. It would have only been true in Europe anyway. And interesting that Pius VII, he was the first pope, really, who became, in Europe, a focus for real affection. That was when Napoleon took him out of Rome and brought him all through Europe, this old man. And people flocked to the coach as he was going up to Paris, blessing them. And it was from then on that the person of the Pope really became more focused, in contrast and in conjunction with the office.
Let's look ahead then to the next pontificate. You've talked to me in the past and to the media in Britain just recently about the need for significant reforms in the running of the church. Can you explain really what you mean by that?
Well, we throw words around, you know. We talk about reform. The church has got to be more collegial. Everybody uses that word. And I also often say that the church must always reform itself. And as it develops, it changes. And I think with this extraordinary modern world, it will change. But I also think that it's been quite evident in Pope John Paul's time, to a certain extent, but particularly so in Pope Benedict's time, how the Pope needs good helpers. And I'm not just thinking of the Curia. I'm thinking also of the bishops. And I think when I talk about reform, I think there can be development of the way the Pope is in contact with the bishops. Obviously not with every bishop, but I think Pope Paul instituted the Synod of Bishops. I don't think it's worked quite as well as it hoped. It's a valuable instrument, but not enough. And I think the next pope maybe will have to think of not only the way he meets with bishops, but perhaps with presidents of conferences, just to have his ear to what's happening around the world and listen through, especially through the senior bishops too.
Is this the number one challenge he faces, do you think, internal organisation, if you like, of the church?
Yes, I think, he'll have to see, how am I going to organise the people who are most who work with him here in the Curia? I mean, and that obviously needs a clarity, I think, and strength and good governance. So that will be important. And then I think the way he cooperates, the kind of advisers he chooses, and the way he's in contact with local churches.
There's been a lot of speculation, of course, here in recent weeks around the VatiLeaks scandal, as it's been called, the difficulties within the Curia at the moment. How much do you think this is going to weigh on the discussions that take place ahead of the conclave?
I think what the cardinals would think is that there must be clarity about these things. If there have been, and a lot of it is just talk, gossip, you know, and the journalists, you know, will obviously use what they can. But we don't want that sort of thing, really, and I think the Pope must see that through the governance of the here in Rome, that doesn't happen. And how does he do that? He does that by strong leadership with the people who are closest to him. But not only the people who are in the Secretariat of State, but also in the congregations. There are cardinals there who are very important people. Well, they also got to be more closely associated with the Pope.
So a reform-minded Pope, a strong leader, what other characteristics will you be looking for?
Well, the main characteristic is that he's a spiritual man. That's what the Church is about. It's about the presence of Christ in the Word and Sacrament, the Holy Spirit. And we want someone who's going to actually incarnate that in his own person. So that's number one. The second one is, I say, this strong leadership and cooperation and with others. The third is somehow that he, with the bishops, are able to be seen in our strange world, that we're listening to the struggles of people, trying to live their faith, and they want encouragement, understanding, and to feel that they're listened to.
Finally, you won't be in the conclave because it's just those who are under 80, and you turned 80 last year. But how much do you think the decision on who the next pope will be takes place in the general congregations before the cardinals enter the Sistine Chapel?
Well, what I think in the general congregations, we'll be talking about the qualities which I've just been mentioning to you. And I think in the quiet, around the corridors, they'll be talking about, well, who are the possible people? So that already there'll be a certain number of names on people's lips when they go into the conclave. Now, what happens inside, you just don't know. I have a feeling the conclave will be a bit longer than last time. So does it make a difference that I'm not going in? Yes and no. You know, obviously, I'm sorry that there's no one from Britain who's going in. But I think the cardinals during the conclave will be having to see who they generally want to vote for and see how the voting goes. And if you had about three candidates, then there'll be a lot of talk in the meantime. So we must hope and pray.